listener production.
The creators of this podcast would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which it is recorded. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are the first storytellers of this land. We pay respect to their elders, past, present, and emerging, as well as any Indigenous people who may be listening today.
Everyone relax. This is TOEFOP with friends. I'm Charlie Clawson, and I have been waiting for this day for many years, a day when I could legitimately talk about wrestling, do an entire podcast about wrestling. I had to have the right reason. I had to have the right person to talk with. And that day has arrived. yesterday marked the final night of WrestleMania 40. And here to break it down with me and discuss all things in the squared circle, it's Michael Chambo Chamberlain. Welcome back to the show.
No dramas, man. Yeah, finally we can actually talk about wrestling on a pod. But people actually, we're not going to detour for 10 minutes and then go, oh, by the way, everyone's turned off by now. So you get it right at the front. You know what you're going to get.
Well, wrestling has gone mainstream again. That is the interesting thing. Like, people that I know who have no interest or very passing interest in wrestling are like, hey, did you hear The Rock's back in the wrestling? Like, it worked.
Dude, I was at work today and I wished everybody a very happy WrestleMania Monday. And at the first meeting of the day, and they were like, what? And I was like, what? But a few of them never knew. Like, I've been talking about it with a couple of mates, and then one mate particularly is just like, this has opened up a whole portal of your life that I had no understanding of whatsoever.
Yeah.
And just trying to get their head around, like, how, you know, wrestling does attract so many different types of people, like everything from the MAGA crowd to intellectuals.
I feel like the people, the good people that...
Oh, shit, I'm getting... Doxed by MAGA people.
Yeah,
now,
100%. I feel like the good people at Listener are very much in the same boat. When I started squeezing some references to the wrestling in early on TOEFOP this year, because Will was into wrestling 20 years ago in the Attitude Era, but he sort of dropped off in a big way. But then he got interested again because he saw The Rock was coming back. And so that sort of gave me the green light to start talking wrestling. So I started kind of bringing Will up to speed on what had been happening and the bloodline and all that kind of stuff. And now, like, it got to the point where I was like, I'm going to do a WrestleMania episode. And everyone's like, really? Do you want to talk about wrestling? And I'm like, yeah, because for me, to be honest, like, it's watching wrestling is part of it. But I am actually more fascinated by the business of wrestling, the circus that is wrestling.
Sure.
Like, I think I am more inclined to watch documentaries about wrestlers and wrestling more than watching, like, actual pay-per-views or SmackDown or Raw or even AEW stuff. Like, I'm just fascinated by the idea that there is this form of entertainment in which people have a high probability of getting injured, a very low chance of making a good living from it. Yet at the same time, it is one of the most popular forms of entertainment in the world. Like, the WWE brand would be one of the most recognizable brands in the world, right?
And you also get so incredibly invested for a thing that is scripted. And you are, I mean, you know, you obviously follow a storyline on a drama or something, but this actually feels like personal.
Yeah.
Because these people are playing characters, but at the same time they're themselves, and you can't do these blurred lines of what's real, what's pretend. And then, yeah, just the whole idea, like, how you get so, I mean, I don't watch the end of a drama and, you know, the couple finally get together and I jump up and down with my friends in a bar. And, yes, yes, Pam and Jim kissed, yes.
It is a weird thing, isn't it? Because it's like it's this kind of agreement. It's a suspension of disbelief. It's, yeah, we all understand that the results are predetermined. And it's so silly. Mm. Like, that's the thing, because a lot of my friends who don't like wrestling, they just can't get past the stupidity of it, which I 100% understand, because so much of it is silly. Like, the idea that the cameras, sometimes the cameras will catch, like, action happening backstage or in the car park where – like, are the wrestlers aware that there are cameras there? Like, it's like they're capturing footage or, like, interactions where the wrestlers aren't aware. And then other times they are aware that the cameras are there. And it's like, what is the – I don't understand. What are the rules of this?
I love it. it probably doesn't happen as much, but probably a bit more back in the day, like when the wrestlers would film a vignette kind of out in the real world, but they'd be in their gear. So they'd be at the airport in their gear. Yeah. or even the days of the hardcore 24/7 title.
Yep.
And like they did, I think they did do a series of pins around the carousel at the airport and just happens to be a referee there.
Yeah.
Like as if they're kind of following the champion at all times. But yeah, it's so amazing. And I'll heads up initially, like you watched more of it than I did. I got to watch about an hour last night.
Yeah.
But I'm across it all. And also during the meetings, like I couldn't watch it, but I also did have to give them updates that, you know, Cody did finish the story. And they were suitably confused by that.
Yeah. Well, I need to sort of also do a disclaimer and say that, like, I am not, like, there are wrestling fans and then there's real wrestling fans. Like, I am not those that hardcore wrestling fan who, like, has an encyclopedic knowledge of all the wrestlers and all the indie circuits and New Japan and all that kind of stuff. Like, I am very, very rudimentary in my understanding. It's mainly the WWE. I sort of dip into AEW from time to time, but that's a classic case where I'm more interested in what's going on behind the scenes because it seems to be such a dumpster fire at the moment. I'm not sure if you saw, but CM Punk came out last week and did like a tell-all interview.
Yeah.
And like I think wrestling, again, is the only form of entertainment where that side of things is as intriguing or there is as big a market for the lifting the curtain and, you know, like if you go on YouTube, you can find shoot videos and that is wrestling talk for people telling the truth about, you know, Bubba Ray Dudley shoots on what it was like working with Devon or so-and-so shoots on this or shoots on that. And, you know, they'll have conventions and, you know, people get flown out to the UK to speak in front of like 2,000 people to just talk about, you know, what it's like being a wrestler. There's this strange obsession around it.
Dude, I couldn't go, but Undertaker was in Australia like only about a month and a half ago or so. I think it coincided with the pay-per-view in Perth. But he was doing a show. I think he did a show at the Palais, which is about 3,000 people. But I couldn't go, but I definitely would have gone to that.
So he was like just an interview, spoken word kind of thing?
I think it was like probably I don't think it was like a Foley kind of stand-up show. It was like moderator, Q&A, put your questions in, something like that. Yeah.
I feel like we've talked about this before, but Mark Calloway, who played The Undertaker for the uninitiated, Undertaker, one of the most legendary wrestlers of the past 30 years, his shtick started off that he was a dead man. He then morphed into the like a pagan kind of like Prince of Lord of Darkness, then became the All-American Badass and then sort of merged all the identities into one. But his whole thing was he spoke very little. He kept kayfabe the whole time. But then since he's retired, he's gotten very, very kind of
going down Media Street.
Media Street. And I don't know if I like it. Like the mystique has definitely evaporated. Him and Sting have done a lot of kind of talking. And they're the two guys in the 90s who their whole shtick was kind of like dark and mysterious and brooding and you never knew too much about them. But now, you know, they'll do a 3-hour podcast and they'll just like talk about everything.
Well, yeah. I mean, Taker had that great doco series about him. That was like the wrestling version of The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan one. So he took it through like for his kind of near his end, like probably had a couple of failed retirements, but the bug was still there. So he could finally have that one match against AJ, which was again not even a real
during COVID
wrestling match as such in the ring. But yeah, it was the COVID WrestleMania. But that was sick, that one.
Yeah.
I love that COVID WrestleMania.
It's funny actually, like you would have thought that if there was any event that was going to derail wrestling, it was COVID, but they thought their way through it. And if you think about the Superfly Funhouse, what's the Firefly Funhouse match between John Cena and Bray Wyatt was really interesting, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But
I'd actually be curious to look back if they actually missed a week. I wonder how much did they actually pause at all? And
I think they got an exemption. I'm pretty sure early on because of Vince McMahon's relationship with Donald Trump. There's two solid individuals, two real good guys.
Well, Linda was on his kind of outer cabinet.
That's right.
She's
business. Wasn't she a business for business or something like that?
I think it was something like that. I think maybe like kind of small business or something. Yeah, she made a couple of goes at the Senate. I imagine they were probably
Senator for turning a blind eye to
Well, yeah. I mean, probably generous contributors to the Trump campaign. Yeah. But then on top of that, there was a great photo I saw. It was a tweet years ago, and it was a picture of Vince and Linda and Trump and Stephanie and Triple H and Shane and maybe Shane's wife or something. And it said Stone Cold has stunned 85% of the people in this picture.
Well, let's start with probably the biggest shock of the entire WrestleMania 40 was that Stone Cold, even though they seemed to be teasing a Stone Cold appearance, Stone Cold never turned up. Were you disappointed by that?
Well, only disappointed when I got onto some online and they were saying, oh, that Undertaker thing clearly would have been Stone Cold. But I don't know if there's a reasoning yet. Like he'd be asleep in America right now. He'd be raised in hell. it kind of does fit that it would have been Stone Cold, but at the same time, I'm happy with Undertaker. And if I didn't know about a possibility of Stone Cold, then I wouldn't be fussed. But it was still pretty sick. I hope it wasn't just like they didn't come to the party with money or something. I hope he had genuinely had a reason, like I'm filming in Brazil and I just literally can't get there. But that would have been
It's kind of weird though, because like I've been following Stone Cold's Instagram and he was dropping hints left, right and center. And so there could be a long build going on, like because The Rock,
that's true.
He did a press scrum, which by the way is the dumbest fucking thing. Of all the innovations the WWE has brought in, the idea of doing a post-match press scrum where they get asked
questions about the matches
if it was a legitimate like contest.
Roman kicked a journo out yesterday, man. Heyman came up and did the Tribal Chief sign, and Roman, I think a journo booed joshingly.
Yeah,
and Roman very seriously kicked him out, mate. You can't mess with the Tribal Chief.
I mean, it's weird. I did see someone on Twitter write like, "What is the point of these press scrums?" The first question Triple H got asked after night two was like, "Hey, legend, what's it like being Triple H right now?" It's like, that's not a question. That's just like a fucking softball bit of publicity, which is clearly why they did it. I mean, if you've ever seen CM Punk's last press scrum he did at AEW before he got fired, that's like a real press scrum. That's where he just dumps on Tony Khan and all the other wrestlers backstage.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's bleeding. He's got I think he tore his other tricep back then, and he really goes to town.
With Punk, is him or is it the organization? You know that kind of thing, and my housemates are all crazy, and then people go, oh, no, actually, you're the – like, I've mentioned he expects high standards of people, and it may be difficult to work with, but
– bit of column A, bit of column B, I think. I think he is I think he's a very stubborn dude who has, you know, a set way and expectations of doing things. But also part of
it. Yeah, he needs a bloody beer, mate. He needs to loosen up a bit. Get rid of the straight edge.
But part of it is his act, right? Like he's the underdog, so he's always got to be kind. I mean, the weird thing since he's come back to the WWE is how smiley he's been. Like everyone was expecting him to be, you know, the voice of the voiceless, the guy who left the WWE, but he's come back just saying how much he loves the place and how he's home. And in that long range interview he did last week, where he sort of like he just opened up about everything that happened at AEW, he basically said that he's an old school wrestler when it comes to he's just in it to make money, and so you know you've really it's a trust game. And when you are promoting an event or when you're planning a match or whatever, it's really got to be about how can we bring the most amount of attention to this and get the most amount of bums on seats and sell the most amount of tickets. And he was saying the problem with AEW is that, you know, they're all fantastic wrestlers and they want to put on these amazing shows. And he's gone, that's great. But you can go to the circus and see people doing backflips and all this kind of stuff. Like where's the actual kind of storyline and investment in building something that's going to bring people through the door? And so he seemed to think that AEW, the friction was with these younger wrestlers who saw him as this dinosaur but also had this axe to grind over their friends with Colt Cabana, and he had a falling out with Colt Cabana and all this kind of stuff. But
sure.
The way he talked about coming back to WWE was that he and Triple H had a meeting, they buried the hatchet, and then it was just a case of like, you know, we move on, we just want to make money. And so I think he'll be – I think he's – the problem is for him, he's at an age where he's just going to break down and get injured. Like, of all the – and we're jumping around all over the shop, but of all the cameos of this WrestleMania with Undertaker and John Cena and even The Rock, like, Cena and Undertaker looked very sore and brittle and inflexible. They didn't look like
– I'm loving Cena's developing bald spot.
Oh yeah, he's covers it well. Like, he's grown his hair longer and he's swept it back.
Yeah. I'm sure in the movies they do a good job on it. Like, you don't see it, but I'm loving the cutters little bit by bit. It's kind of getting bigger and bigger. You can just get that fixed. Like, if it's coming from the front and he was kind of going bald backwards, yeah. But kind of he can put a little patch on the top of that.
Yeah.
Fine.
Well, you just leave a hat on. But let's get into some of the results, and that can maybe lead us on to some discussion. So day one, the opening match was Rhea Ripley and Becky Lynch, which mm-hmm. I thought was a pretty good opener. Yeah. Like, I sort of wasn't sure how much I liked Rhea Ripley. I wasn't getting why she was so popular, but I'm starting to get it now. Like, she has that kind of she's charismatic. But it's just her physicality, like what she can do. If you put her with a smaller wrestler like Becky Lynch, like, it was actually a pretty good double act because she was able just to like throw around.
Yeah. I've very much warmed to her. It took me a while to get to warm to Rhea. But, you know, you got to support Adelaide's finest.
Yeah.
And I saw something online. Someone said that Becky was crook as well. She had like a 100-degree fever.
Gastro or something, or maybe the flu. They were saying that in the commentary.
Yeah, sure. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. Michael Cole, Pat McAfee, and the other dude, what's his face, you know, neck tattoos.
Corey Graves
were going on about her fever before the match. So it must have been
Sure.
But it was a good match. Like, it actually had a lot to it. But I wonder with Rhea, like, whether she, because her whole image, this goth image, came in tandem with going over to Judgment Day. So if she, because eventually they'll have to leave that faction, if she'll stick with this kind of goth ass kicker image, because it works for her and she seems to do really well with it. But,
well, I also think it's very much her too. I listened to an interview with her with Mark Howard, I think it was, and it was kind of a long two-parter. And she, you know, initially, you look at old photos, she's
blonde,
like,
and,
you know, kind of
tanned,
blonde kind of cheerleader kind of look. Yeah. And then she was like, that's not me. And it took a while for her to say, can I just cut my hair and dye it? And then I think eventually she was like, can I get a tattoo? Cut two. She's getting a tattoo live at WWE World just the other day. Yeah, in Philly. So it was like, come to the you know, convention, and Rhea Ripley would be there getting a tattoo live.
I feel
she stays onto that thing, but yeah, she will be the breakaway from Judgment Day. It's just a matter of how that happened or why.
It's a thing about factions, because she's successful factions, isn't it? Because when it's working, it's like, you know, it's like the Shield or it's like Evolution or whatever. It's like, you kind of don't want to break them up because then you lose the magic. But at some point you have to sort of test out the singles potential or the doubles potential for a tag team.
I mean, then they had shit like NWO back in the day where it's like
400.
It was like 400 people would come out at the start of Nitro. Yeah. You go, well, fucking hell, mate. What's going on here? Because they all wanted that rub.
I was interested to see, like, when I showed Iona the Royal Rumble, she was really into it. And I was like, oh, I wonder if Rhea Ripley is going to be too scary for her, because the makeup and, you know, the entrance, it's all a bit sort of spooky and stuff. But she was way into it. She thought Rhea Ripley was like pretty cool. So I'm like, all right, I think I can invest in that. If I'll take my daughter's a guide on that. The next match was a six-pack tag team ladder match between A-Town, Down Under, The Awesome Truth, which is The Miz and R-Truth. It's funny how, like, R-Truth is becoming the modern Booker T. Like, he's sort of
– yeah, dude.
There's more – people like him for the comedy spots more than anything now.
And, he's been there a while, so you kind of just find your niche, don't you?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's running out for the Women's Royal Rumble, kind of going like, what? Yeah, yeah. I thought I meant to be –
trying
entering,
to join Judgment
know?
Day.
Yeah, no, he's great. Yeah. And he's very funny. And these matches obviously put together, these are the ones where you get the big spots.
Yeah.
Chuck a ladder in the middle and you get everything going.
Yeah, okay. So it's Judgment Day. There was DIY, New Day, New Catch Republic. But I sort of – this is the first match where I started getting a bit bored, because the thing about when you have, you know, 12 people in a ring is like it's hard to sort of tell any kind of stories, and the setups become so obvious. So like to me it felt like they weren't even really trying to – they immediately just put like three ladders into the ring and set up like tables everywhere, and it was like, okay, so you know, there was no build up or kind of suspense or anything. It's like, okay, so we're going to see some people go through tables and stuff. I think everyone match are good wrestlers, but it just, I don't know, I didn't quite understand the rules as well, because they had the SmackDown tag team belts on one hook and the Raw on the other, and I didn't understand, like, could you win? Could one team win four? Yeah, or win both? Or
I actually think that's what they should have done. They should have had both. So I only got near the tail end of that. So did Grayson and Austin.
Yeah,
they left the ring when they'd won that title. Yeah, so I figure you should make some weird stipulation where you can win both, and then just deal with the SmackDown Raw thing.
Well,
when you need.
Yeah, I think that. But as soon as you saw them hanging on two separate hooks, you're like, okay, that's not going to happen. That would have been more interesting, your way of doing it, because that's sort of like anything goes. Mm. I don't know. I sort of, even the Royal Rumble, I'm like, yeah, there's too many people in the ring. I can't follow what's going on. And it's always that thing too of like, there's always one guy in the corner who's taken like 10 minutes to recover. He's just sort of sitting there holding his head, waiting for his spot.
Yeah. Six teams is a lot of teams. So probably 3 to 4 is, for that kind of match, is probably optimal.
Yeah. And I also think too, when you got, like, if you think about, you know, the original TLC, when it was just like three tag teams, that seems to be a good number for action, because
I think so,
well, because you can literally have one team doing tables, one team doing ladders, one team doing chairs or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean, in general, how do you feel about the 2-day WrestleMania? Like, I understand you've got to do it now, because there's such a healthy women's competition, so you need to kind of get
it. Was getting a bit, I mean, obviously I haven't been there, but it was getting to that stage, which wasn't they were blowing out to about 7 hours.
Yeah.
So actually one thing I noticed yesterday, I was like, oh, sheesh, we're already at the main event. Yeah. Like, it actually felt like it went pretty quickly.
What is it? Well, it was 4 hours though, right, each day, it felt like.
I think so, yeah, yeah. So the main event was about 45 minutes, I think.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if that includes entrances. But but it was getting a bit regular. And then also you do notice that by the main event or the final 2-3 matches, the crowd spent their time, You know, forget there's a lot of young people there.
And it's freezing apparently in Philadelphia for this one.
Yeah, and then I actually even thought the crowd last night, for the first night, was a little flat.
Yeah. I'm not really sure too what I think of Austin Theory. Like, I know his shtick is he's meant to be this douchebag. But, like, he got a real big push last year. He was like, didn't he fight, was it John Cena at WrestleMania? Right. And he's taken a...
Yeah, but wasn't he Vince McMahon's little guy too?
Yeah, like, yeah, his pet project.
Vince love him? So that's why he got the...
But it's funny, I was paying close attention to him. And he's kind of got, like, the whole package. He's got the look, he's got the physique. He can clearly work. But he's a little weird looking. Like, he's a bit disproportionate or something. Like, I don't know what it is about his little... Like, I'm wondering if he's quite short or something, because he just looks... There's something that's just a bit off, and I think that subconsciously that's why crowds haven't taken to him, because there's something in your head that's like there's something wrong with
they're watching him
that
going,
little weirdo.
What's wrong with that guy instead of watching the game? They're going, I don't know, his
head's
out
too
of shape
big
or
too, his head's too big or too small. His muscles are too big or
I think
too
his
small.
Head might be,
I can't work it out.
Yeah, something not quite right. It's like you kind of
But it's funny though with like Theory and Grayson Waller and Logan Paul. You got your three frat boy douchebags, and I know they've kind of there's been sort of playing with the idea of having them as a group, you know, unofficial kind of like faction or whatever, but is it too much of the same flavor? Like, you know, like what's the, I always think of the Christopher Nowinski
Harvard graduate. They'd definitely be very unlikable, but yes, they all are one of the same. And then also, you usually find maybe, Judgment Day, it's not so much. They're kind of young ones, but you usually find with a faction that there's a clear leader.
Yeah. That would be Logan.
And then
Paul.
Also, I don't know how much. Yeah, I suppose it would be. I'm not sure how much he's going to be around, though, in terms of like week to week.
I mean, judging from the amount of Prime advertising that was in this WrestleMania, I think he must have signed a very long term. I was actually wondering that, like, how much is he getting a talent fee and how much is him saying, look, I will defer my fee, but if you guys can because he would have got a fortune in free advertising. Like, it was literally day two was Prime. The ring had a big Prime logo in it. There was Prime drinks beside it. They incorporated Prime into the matches. Like,
didn't he come out in a Prime truck or something?
A rocket. He was riding a rocket with Prime written on it. I mean, like, the shilling of sponsorships is so unashamed. Like, day two, AJ Styles rocks up in a Slim Jim car, walks to the ring, hands the keys to a woman who's in a section that is everyone's wearing Slim Jim t-shirts. I'm like, why does she need a fucking Slim Jim car? And then it was like the Slim Jim ring.
You really have to leave your commercial integrity at the door when you walk into the WWE.
I mean, I'd be interested.
You can't be like, oh no.
I'd be interested to know what the
I wouldn't advertise that.
The buy rate is though, like what you're paying. You know, is it like a Super Bowl ad? Because then you've also got ads in between the matches as well. Mm. So I'd be interested to know where it ranks in terms of like audience numbers and how expensive it would be.
I think on par with the Super Bowl. I think I saw some stat. I think it was last year's WrestleMania. And for social media imprints, I think it beat the Super Bowl.
Right.
So in terms of ad spend, I don't know if you're going to get $5 million like you would at the Super Bowl, but it's not really a thing with ads anymore. But definitely would be up there.
I mean, there was the interesting thing about wrestling at the moment as well is obviously with the horrible, you know, Vince McMahon allegations and everything that's come out about him, and that's coincided with this sudden rise in popularity of wrestling again. You know, it's everywhere, it's mainstream, is how they've successfully managed to kind of chew bubblegum and walk at the same time. Like, they are distancing themselves from Vince. Like, I was really surprised day two, Stephanie came out to do the welcome, and I'm like, oh, that's bold to bring a McMahon out. I thought they'd just be trying to keep McMahon's as far away from this as possible. But she came out and, like, she even, I was listening to her, I was like, oh, I wonder if she's going to mention her dad here at all. She talked about, oh, I've been coming to WrestleMania since, like, WrestleMania 8, you know, I was a little girl standing behind the curtain and I've come to everyone since. And I was like, who brought you, Steph? Like, why are you at WrestleMania 8? But she just talked about that. And then at the very end, when after Cody had won, she called Triple H to the ring and said, this is the era, this is the Paul Levesque era of the WWE. And they made a real point of separating.
Are.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that would be sort of part of the TKO takeover as well, right?
I mean, in Paul Heyman's speech in the Hall of Fame, he gave a big shout out to Triple H and talked about, you know, in that kind of the last year and a half or whatever where Triple H took over, Vince was gone, then Vince came back for a little bit, now Vince is gone. Yes, it's a real delineation. Like, I wonder what the Attitude Era title will be, because I don't think we'll be going around like talking about the Paul Levesque era on a T-shirt.
Well, weren't they calling it the Renaissance?
What the word will be.
I thought it was called the Renaissance.
Oh, maybe they are.
That's what I heard, is the Renaissance era. Which is kind of short-sighted, because that suggests that there may not be another one. If you call this the Renaissance, it says things were better back in a previous time. Okay, so the next match on day one, I was again a bit dull for me, was Rey Mysterio and Andrade defeating Santos Escobar and dirty, can you boo when I say this, dirty Dominic Mysterio.
Boo. I did find that one. I found that one to be short and also a bit nothing.
Yeah.
I was actually, and even actually, that's when I noticed the crowd was a bit like, even for like for Ray 619, the crowd was just like, oh, sheesh, really? But I don't know. It was maybe, you feel like the Dom thing is kind of, I mean, it's been 2 years now, kind of coming back to the well of the dad.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that this, I think we've kind of, not we, but audiences have forgotten why they're booing Dom. We just know that we boo Dom. And so
you
don't need to bring Ray out. We're booing him. Just give him have him do something else scumbaggy and you'll just keep the momentum going.
There's a show I'm working on last year. So on the show they do they get a respected movie critic and they kind of review trashy TV. And so last year we did WrestleMania 39.
Oh, yeah, Margaret Pomerantz.
And Yeah. And so she reviews WrestleMania 39 and treats it like high art. and the fact checker, bless her cotton socks, you know, has to fact check things and all that. And then she came and she said, oh, fact check WrestleMania. I was like, oh. And she's like, had the notes, and she was like, look, I can't confirm. Like, it's there's proof that Dominic attacked his father, but I can't confirm that he gets released from jail to come and wrestle at WrestleMania. I was like, oh, you're adorable for doing that.
That's my favorite part about Dom. I think Dom went to jail for 24 hours, but then he's come out and he's doing promos where he's like, prison changes a man.
It's like when Brandon has one beer on 90210 and then all of a sudden he's at an AA meeting.
Yeah, that match.
But I do love Dom.
Yeah, he's great. But I would like to see him get a bit of separation from Judgment Day and his dad now, because I think that he could be a real good, like, Weasley scumbag, like a honky-tonk man or someone like that.
It was a little bit like back in the day. Remember when Tito Santana and Rick Martel, the model Rick Martel, arrogance. And they broke up like about WrestleMania 4 or 5.
What were they called? What were they called, the tag team? Strike Force.
Good question.
Strike Force.
Yeah, they were champions for a bit. But they and then, like, you know, four years later, like, you know, Tito would be in a Royal Rumble and the first person he'd go to was Rick Martel. It's like, mate, you get over it by now.
Yeah.
Like, let it go.
I love, like, wrestling back in the 80s and 90s, like, the way there was no, like, subtext, the fact that they called his cologne arrogance, you know, rather than just, like, commit to the bit, and it's just some kind of pretentious name, but the fact that he was good, and he would carry it around in, like, a pesticide sprayer, you know what I mean? Like,
that's right.
Go to the ring.
Yeah, so haven't you bought Arrogance at the Chemist Warehouse?
Yeah. It's David Beckham.
There's the Delta one and the Kylie one and the Ariana Grande one. Then you got Arrogance, Rick Martel. It's a top seller.
So after that match was the Uso brothers, Jay and Jimmy. And I sort of feel like Dom Mysterio, I'm a bit over this bloodline storyline, this particular one about, you know, Jay leaving the bloodline and Jimmy, you know.
Yeah.
And
I feel like that's the blow-off.
Yeah, the blow-off?
And
what do you mean?
Weren't people just like, that's kind of it? I don't think, Jimmy will get back into regular.
Yeah.
I think so. I think Jimmy might get back into regular bloodline stuff. I mean, we still got to work out the progression of the bloodline. Does it still hold on, you know? I wouldn't be surprised if there's a Roman babyface turn and The Rock, it stays a solid heel, and they do like a SummerSlam or something.
Mm.
But even just fishing around online, it seemed like people were pretty. This is one I didn't get to say, but it seemed like people were pretty disappointed with this one. Which I thought that if you looked at the card, that it could have been a the best match on the card. But some people didn't really.
Yeah, it just felt like we've seen it before. Like, it didn't feel like anything new. And that's what I mean about, like, you got to get away from it, because the storyline hasn't really progressed or changed in 12 months. It's not like there's new wrinkles to their issues. It's not like, I don't know, Jay went back the bloodline and left again. It's just the same shit they're arguing over, and it just gets a bit tired. And also, I don't know that Jay's moveset interests me. Like, it's all fairly, like, you know, he does a frog splash and a spear and a super kick, and it's like, I don't know, I just feel like someone of his cruiserweight should be doing more spectacular stuff.
I'm getting a bit tired of spears, I must say.
Did you see
Goldberg
came out and was complaining about the way he was treated by the WWE, that they sort of sacked him, and they said that they took his finisher and gave it to Roman Reigns. And it's like, the spear? That's the most like basic comment. Anytime they get an ex-NFL footballer, that's the finishing move they give him. What are you talking about? That's not
I don't know, man. I mean, Edge had one. It feels like everybody's doing a spear these days.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like they kind of – I know you can't, delineate moves of one person. But I feel like at least Roman can have a spear at this stage, you know. But it feels like everyone's chucking
them down. I often try and go online and find out, like, how do they do these moves without hurting or, you know, reducing the harm to their opponent.
How do they do the spear? Because that actually
I haven't been able to find it. Like, I guess it's just a case if you've got to throw your momentum back at the same time as...
One of the more terrifying moments for me on a football field was when I was living in London back in 1998 and I played for the local team, the Wimbledon Hawks in the Bafal League, the British Australian Rules League. And we went and played the Bristol Dockers, I think they were. And I had the ball, and one of the rules is that half the team has to be not English as such, but not Australian. And so you play against Brits and people from all around the world. But I had the ball, and I saw this big unit, and with a rugby background, obviously, and I saw him duck his head and prepare to run at me like full rugby style. And I was like, oh, no, because in Australian rules, we don't really tackle like that. You know, we grab them with the arms, but this guy just head down and speared me basically to the ground and landed on me. And yes, it was not fun. I would have been counted 1, 2, 3. Right,
come on, ref. Square. Come on, ref.
he would have ended my story.
Then after that, it was Damage Control taking on Bianca Belair, Jade Cargill, and Naomi in a 6-woman tag team match, which is actually really entertaining. I haven't quite got my head around what Jade Cargill's character is yet. Like, she seems to sort of be this, I mean, she's got this amazing physique, you know, and so she sort of has this kind of, you know, like, it's like a Goldberg, you know, she's just a destruction machine. She doesn't wrestle for a long time. She just comes in 2 or 3 quick power moves. She finishes it. But I haven't seen, apart from like her physical presentation, like I haven't seen her do much on the mic or anything that makes her particularly interesting. Like Bianca Belair, I think, is really good.
Yeah, dude, she's amazing. And she did the hair stamp again this WrestleMania, which actually would genuinely kill. That would hurt a lot.
And I like Asuka. I think she's great as well.
Jade, I haven't really got my head around yet. I mean, she's more of all the women's division, she'd have to be the kind of the muscular one. She's
kind of similar physiques. Yeah, they're strong, but they've got like shoulders and six packs and stuff, but they do similar power moves, similar to Rhea Ripley, I guess, in some kind of way. But they sort of were also doing this presentation with her, like she's Storm from the X-Men because she's got the silver hair.
And
they had this kind of superhero thing going on, but I don't know. I'm just maybe it's because she's new, but I'm not really catching on to what they want us to feel or think with her.
Well, she only came out from the Rumble, and she hasn't done a great deal since the Rumble.
Maybe that's why I don't know anything about her, because I'm like, she's the one who got the pin in this match, and it was the thing of like they brought it in the last minute, the crowd goes crazy, 2 or 3 power moves. Match over.
Sure.
This next match was actually my pick for the entire WrestleMania. It was Sami Zayn defeated Gunther for the Intercontinental Champion. It was, I was so like whatever leading into it, because they were so blatantly ripping off Rocky. Like that was, they even had this scene where, you know, Chad Gable's training Sami Zayn for this big match, and you know, Sammy's dragging his feet and he's like, what's wrong? He's like, I'm scared. All right, I'm scared. Do you want to hear me say it?
I saw that.
It's like, what the fuck is going on? Like, Sylvester Stallone's going to sue somebody.
They had him chasing a chicken in a backyard. It was pretty. Did they? Come on, guys. It's rip-off. Right. No.
But it was that. And it makes sense because you got your big European heel and you got your scrappy underdog. And like just before Sammy goes out to his entrance music, his wife and his son come up, his 3-year-old, and I love your daddy and stuff. And I'm like, I'm so dumb. But then the match starts.
And then Kevin Owens.
Oh, yeah, Kevin Owens gives him the big hug. But then the match starts, and it's like, I like Gunther. I think he's an excellent heel. And I'm kind of bummed that he's lost the Intercontinental title, because I think you could have done like a Roman Reigns-esque, you know, 3-year run with him. Or maybe it's been 3 years already, I don't know. But
I was feeling they wouldn't take the title off him by the fact I found this build to be quite quick.
Yeah, right.
So Sammy hadn't really chased it a great deal.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was a sign that they'd just go, oh, no, we're keeping on Gunter, but, you know, Sammy would be fine. But anyway, they've decided to end it and he took the title.
Yeah, so what was it? What do you know? Because I can't remember. What was the seed of this feud? Like was it just Gunther thought he was not good enough?
That's a very good question. Well, didn't you go into a tournament to be a number one qualifier?
Right. Oh, it was an elimination chamber or something.
I think it was just like a tournament, right, really, as such. Because didn't Sammy beat Chad in the get the top contender?
Right, the slot.
Because I mean, I feel like Gunther needs almost the characters to come to him as opposed to him chasing the characters. Does that make sense?
Totally.
Just by the fact he's not enormous on the mic.
Problem when you have a character that you set up like being this kind of robotic, indestructible killing machine is that once they lose that aura, then, I mean, it can go one of two ways. They can find a new storyline where he, you know, maintains that thing, or they put him into a comedy storyline. They partner him up with R-Truth. You know, and it's like Gunther gets a makeover or some shit like that, or like Gunther comes out and dances to hip hop or something like that. You know, they'll like they did with the Great Khali.
The fuck.
The main event on night one was, of course, the Bloodline consisting of Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Roman Reigns taking on Cody Rhodes and Seth freaking Rollins. Now, I've always been a big Seth freaking Rollins fan. But I was last night when I was watching his entrance, I'm like, who does he remind me of? And then I've hit upon what it is. He's Macho Man. Like, that is the kind of territory he's adopted, with the sort of flamboyant costumes and the kind of like,
sure,
you know, crazy energy, and, you know, the sort of promos which don't seem to make any sense and stuff. Like, less cocaine, I think.
Yeah.
it's less cocaine fueled, but he's got real macho energy going, which I think works for him because he can pull that off. And I think if you sort of go back to what he was like when he was in the Shield, and then coming out of that when he was the Architect and the King Slayer and all that kind of stuff, it's all a bit self-serious, but I like this side of him.
It was a hell of a jacket.
Yeah, with a big flower on it.
And so he went into the match. He was fit, I suppose, but you still have your doubts about your knee, because he didn't hurt it that long ago.
Yeah.
But then they targeted the knee. Now, I thought that match would have a lot more shenanigans.
Yeah, right.
I thought at least we'd get a solo out there to just do something, you know. I thought there'd be a bit more.
But they couldn't do that because, I mean, it's Bloodline rules the next day.
Cheating.
Yeah, but there was cheating. It was just that The Rock was pulling rank being a board member, which, don't you think it's hilarious that the WWE has made this concerted effort in the last 20 years to go PG, then they sign The Rock, and then it's fuck this, fuck that, you know, eat my dick. Like, there's so much kind of.
Even tonight, even walking down in day two, like when he came in for the run-in with in the main event, and I noticed they went blank because he went silent because he was –
they missed the night one. They missed the whoever was doing like the kill button or whatever it's called. They missed so many. Mm-hmm. Like, there was just so many fucks. Which I guess is the boss, so you can't get in trouble. But because you had said to me that you thought it was a bit underwhelming before I watched it, and so I was expecting it to be a lot worse. I really enjoyed it. I actually thought I found it really entertaining. I thought it went for a bit too long. Like, I don't know why they had to fight out into the crowd. I don't know. There was a whole bit where The Rock took Cody. No, Roman took Cody up to the Jumbotron, and Seth and The Rock.
Yeah,
I don't know why we needed to do that.
It's a long way back.
Yeah, but it didn't build to anything. I thought that's where you're going to get maybe some shenanigans. Like, maybe there was a hidden something or someone. But this was like, oh no, then they brought the way back, and like, I got to say, I had doubts that The Rock would be able to keep up. Like, I just thought he looked a bit rusty on the house shows. But he was good. Like, he actually, you know, seemed quite vintage. He flubbed one bit where he went to do like a stomp and he lost his balance and fell into the ropes and looked a bit looked a bit unco for a second. But that was his only real obvious mess up. But then when they did that brawling out to the crowd, you could see him calling moves to Seth. Like he was literally like dictating, take me over here. And I was like, they've just got to kill the mics. Like when they're getting that close. Yeah. Just, I mean, I know John Cena doesn't give a shit. He'll just like call them as blatantly as possible.
I suppose in the back of our heads as well is that you figured that Rock and Roman were going over by the fact you go, well, it takes away the whole bloodline thing from night two.
Exactly.
So that maybe dampened our expectations a little bit.
All right. So day two starts with Drew McIntyre taking on Seth freaking Rollins with CM Punk on special comments.
I was looking forward to this one because I thought, I mean, obviously Rollins and CM were going to be the
They were meant to be the
going to be that event. Yeah. Well, but I rate Drew. I like him, and even though he and then it was actually cool for Priest to finally. Cash in because he's tried a few times. Yeah.
So hang on, before,
I definitely don't.
Before you get to that, I had no idea, but they mentioned in the commentary that Drew McIntyre is one of the most popular social media wrestlers on social media. He's got one of the most popular accounts. He gets the most engagement, which has really surprised me. I've heard him talk on like podcasts and do interviews, and he's a really switched on, savvy dude. Like, you could sort of see him moving into an admin role once he retires, like a Paul, like a Triple H kind of thing. Because he understands the business and he's very interested in like the actual kind of the admin side of it. I can't remember what, maybe it's actually, it could have been Broken Skull Sessions where he was just reeling off all these facts to Stone Cold where he's talking about, you know, this is our biggest demo. This is, we have the buy rate here. And I was like, oh, holy fuck. Like, this is a guy who really kind of takes the business side of it seriously.
I don't know if Triple H would call what he does admin, though, Charles.
Chief Creative Officer.
Well, he was very vocal about in the lead up to this, you know, part character, part thing, but he was very vocal about towards CM Punk and Seth on his social media. Right. And then even last night, he put out a tweet when the Rock and Roman won, and it was like, Drew in his hotel room watching it with a few friends or family or whatever. And he's just like, didn't I tell you this is what's going to happen? I'm a psychic. He said, I think it was like, write the funniest comment on my Instagram and I'll give you the lotto numbers for next week because I'm psychic. So, yes, he's definitely upped his game there. But then also, don't they have Clash at the Castle coming up?
Yeah.
Not too far away, so he can win it off Priest there. I felt bad for him,
like he's never won a title in front of an audience. He finally does it, and then they fucking Money in the Bank him.
That's a good point. Yeah.
But yeah. I guess, like, you know, I mean, if this was a real competition, it would be heartbreaking. But he was aware of it and agreed to it, so like, can't feel too sorry for him. It is funny though that that same interview that Punk did. The guy interviewing him said, when you came, he said, who knew you were coming back to WWE? And Punk said, me, my wife, Triple H, that was it. And so he said, so those reactions of those wrestlers, that was real. And he's like, yeah. And it's gone, oh, because I interviewed Becky Lynch and she was saying how Seth was really pissed off that you were back. And Sam was like, yeah, no, I understand that. There's quite a few people who aren't happy I'm back. So I think there's actually some genuine, I mean, unless CM Punk's just, it's a great work. Like, I think there is sort of some genuine animosity. But I thought that I didn't know how they're going to use CM Punk in the match. I was like, oh, I hope they don't, like, try and, you know, bring him into the ring. But I thought it was actually just the right amount of interference. And then, obviously, you bring down Damian Priest. It's a good little twist because I didn't sort of even consider that happening. I was actually happy for Drew. I was like, oh, that's good. You won a title. But there was a weird bit of, like, Fabulous Baker Boys – sexy moment where he crawled, you know, coquettishly across the desk in his little tight leather undies towards, I thought he was going to give him a lap dance at one point. I was like, what's some sexual attention he started singing, making whoopee.
Happy birthday, like, saying happy birthday like Marilyn Monroe.
There was a good bit too when, so for Drew's entrance, they did the whole Braveheart theme, which is hilarious because every Scots person I know, including my wife, like, Braveheart is filled with tons of historical inaccuracies, starting with the fact that like kilts weren't worn until, you know, the late 18th century. They didn't paint their faces. Highlanders didn't paint their faces blue. There's all that shit's wrong. That's fucking the Mel Gibson movie. But when Drew was walking to the ring under like a bunch of Highlanders with their swords up, and Corey Graves is like, "Look at all those warriors. What do you call them?" And CM Punk's gone, "Nerds. They're nerds."
I was going to say when they lean into the heritage stuff, like there are early footage of Becky Lynch on, it might not even have been NXT. I don't think NXT was even around then, but her coming out, river dancing.
Oh, that's right. They showed that. Entrance,
and it's like, oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, they showed that in her package before her match against Rhea was oh, fuck, that's right. Yep. What are you doing?
Yeah.
A happy little leprechaun. There was another girl, another Irish wrestler, where they've got her at the moment doing a similar thing. She wears like a super, she's like the Hurricane thing. She wears a superhero mask. Oh, no, it was a couple of years ago. She was Rhea's tag team partner and she was this little Irish, and it was basically that same gimmick where it's like, I'm Irish, so I dance like a leprechaun and blah, blah, blah. Like,
yeah, sure.
I guess under the Vince McMahon era, whatever your ethnicity, be prepared to be offended because he's got an idea for you.
Well, yeah, if you're Hawaiian, be prepared to play Japanese. Yeah. but like,
or if you're also white, that thing, be prepared to play African, like Hakeem, the African Dream.
But there's that thing as well. Also, when you look at the very early footage of people, even before they're back in WWE or whatever, and when they're trying to be babyface. And that first entrance kind of thing, and the way they just oversell, like, hey, I'm a nice guy. And they're smiling and they're high-fiving all the fans and all that kind of jokes before they work out that you don't necessarily have to do that to come across as a good guy.
Yeah. I think that the Ruthless Aggression debut of John Cena, where he comes out, he's like little tidy whitey, he stalks the ring and then just like gets in Kurt Angle's face.
Well, because I suppose it's a bit like when you go to, I mean, I went to one at a town hall, where was it? Somewhere in Sydney, not too long ago, like 2 years ago. And I suppose when you go to an event like that, you actually don't have any background on those people because, you know, I'm not following that their group. So, yeah, I suppose they have to kind of actually make it very clear from the start, I am a bad guy or I'm a good guy, you know.
Well, don't you just wait till because they want people to boo before they get to the ring. So can't you just...
Before they get to the ring, yeah.
All right. So after Damian Priest cash in his Money in the Bank briefcase, he's a good wrestler too. I like Damian Priest. I think he's got huge potential to be like a Undertaker-esque, just super scary bad guy. Good wrestler, great physique. I don't know what his gimmick is beyond being in the Judgment Day though. I don't know enough about his personality. Like, is he a...
Well, now they've got... male and female champions in Judgment Day as well. Oh, yeah, so could that reap dissension as well by the fact that they've got the titles and the others.
Because they lost the tag team titles in the six man tag, whatever. There was another six man tag team match on day two, which was the Builders, the Philadelphia Street Fight, which was refereed by Bubba Ray Dudley, who's a Philadelphia native. I didn't realize. So it was Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits taking on the Final Testament, which is Karrion Kross, Akam, and Reza. I didn't even know who those two guys were when they walked out to the ring. This was like the other six-man tag team match. I got very bored very quickly, don't really care. Bobby Lashley, I just can't get behind. I don't find him interesting. I mean, I think he's obviously like a pretty amazing athlete and stuff, but I don't care about him.
So this one I have missed entirely. So Philadelphia Street Fight, was that just like no disqualification?
That's right. Yeah.
Garbage cans.
Yeah, there's like kendo sticks. Why are you allowed to keep kendo sticks? Like, there is no need for kendo sticks at a wrestling match.
So is wrestling keeping the kendo market in business?
I don't even know. What is a kendo stick like when it's not used for wrestling? Is it like a martial arts thing?
I presume it's a martial arts thing. Like, but I don't think I've ever seen one actually used in like any kind of professional martial arts tournament or anything.
Kendo. I presume it's a stick. I'm just typing it in.
I feel like it's something that you'd whack on your hands or something to kind of strengthen your hands, or is it the type of thing?
It's a Japanese sword made of bamboo used for practice and competition in kendo. Okay, so it's like a. How did it get into wrestling? Like, how the fuck?
And it, because it makes a good sound.
Yeah, right. And it doesn't. And it probably doesn't cause too much damage.
And it to me, it kind of looks like a thing, kind of thing you might use if you get caned, like if you.
Oh yeah, like in World War II or something. If you're a prisoner of war.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, you kind of get caned on the back with something like that.
Oh my god! I bet you, Mr. Fuji's so glad that he died before kendo sticks were introduced, because got a feeling I knew what his gimmick was going to be. Yeah, so that was pretty boring. Snoop Dogg, Hall of Famer, Snoop Dogg came to join the commentary team for that for some reason. Did a lot of shizzle my nizzle, and then. Mm-hmm. Got in the ring afterwards and celebrated with Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits. He's funny, actually, because, like, I guess, I mean, Snoop Dogg, commentating's not his first job, but, mm-hmm. like, he kept sort of saying, this is how it goes down on the street, like, just like this. I'm like, really? Is this how it goes down in South Central? There's kendo sticks and trash cans and folding tables.
Yeah,
and,
they have it happens all the time.
And at one stage,
the cops have to stop and search people, and they go, "Hey, you got a kendo stick in your pocket."
At one stage, one of the girl valets, got involved, and Snoop Dogg was like, "Yeah, that's what I expect too. If I get into a fight, I expect my girl to get in too." I'm like, "Really? That doesn't seem very clever. Don't do that."
I remember seeing Snoop. Was it last year at WrestleMania? Yeah, it was last year, and he was going around giving people. Like these very expensive necklaces.
Right.
I saw him give one to Undertaker and his wife. But
was there to plug. He and Dr. Dre have just released. You talk about fucking the commercialism. He and Dr. Dre have got their own line of gin and juice. And so he was there to promote Snoop Dogg and Dre's gin and juice. Yeah. I think that's what he celebrated with Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits in the ring with his very own gin and juice. Just shameless, fucking shameless. Okay, we move on to LA Knight taking on AJ Styles. Now, I've missed the whole LA Knight kind of phenomenon. Are you up to speed with how he got popular?
Well, I had to catch up with it. Actually, I had to tell me because I was like, all of a sudden he was like super popular and then also, main eventing pay-per-views and the like. But he's been around for a fair while.
He's 40-something.
Nearly 40.
No, he's closer in age to us.
Because I heard a chat to him on a pod the other day, and he was saying when COVID hit, he was like, ugh, like this could be the end of me because I don't know how long this is going to go. And he said, I'm at the age where you can kind of be put on the shelf. And he was kind of doing the sums of like, okay, how much money can I actually make if I, really aren't going to get into that top tier league? Yeah. But I mean, I found this actually quite unprofessional, but AJ and LA Knight were at the WWE World doing interviews and stuff like that, and they had a
fight. Oh, like, what? Come on, guys.
In front of people. AJ got a blood nose, but yeah, I thought, guys, we all know you settle it in the ring, okay? You don't do that in front of the press. It was unsightly, I'm sure PR people had to clean up, with the media and
The sense that I get from reading the dirt sheets, Michael, is that LA Knight is kind of like, he's Cody Rhodes, but he didn't get his rightful recognition. Like, he had the popularity of a Cody Rhodes and everyone would see him do well, but the WWE just refused to put him in the main event slots. And so he won this match against AJ, but it felt like, I feel like it's a little too late because maybe the popularity's cooled a little bit. The time to do it was probably at Rumble.
Yeah.
Or something, or maybe even earlier than that when he was like red hot and he could have been, but I guess, what's the storyline? Who do you put him up against? You can't have him going against the Bloodline. That storyline was already underway. It's like, so it'll be interesting to see if he can get back to that level of popularity. It was an okay match. Nothing super remarkable about it. It was pretty short, actually. Then after that, it was the three-way, the triple threat, I should say, between Logan Paul, Kevin Owens, and Randy Orton. Super entertaining match. Like Kevin Owens and Randy Orton are a good double act. You know, that sneaky bloody apex predator. I can't trust him, Michael. Can't trust him. Kevin Owens thought that they were going to team up to try and get Logan Paul before they sorted out their own issues. But that sneaky, sneaky Viper tried to RKO him out of nowhere, Michael. Out of nowhere.
No way. I don't trust that guy.
I mean,
you know, I've been caught out too many times. I mean, I thought when he, you know, RKO'd Stephanie McMahon, like, Triple H had to come out and he let down. Yeah, he had Triple H handcuffed to the ropes, and then he RKO'd his wife, and then he went down and kissed her on the cheek, and Triple H couldn't reach because he's handcuffed. He's trying to reach out. What a scumbag.
Logan Paul wins that. Brass knuckles, bit of interference. There was some very clumsily handled surprise cameo. There was, because it was a Prime energy drink mascot.
Yeah. Isn't that Logan's mate? Isn't it KCI?
I have no idea who it is. Some KSI, famous YouTuber or influencer.
I think it's Logan's offside. He was there last year, I think it was, when Logan jumped off onto the table and that guy took the blow for
right, him. Right, okay.
Well, accidentally took
the blow. Yeah, well, he didn't do much. He got kicked in the guts by Randy Savage, and I can't remember, did he get an RKO or not? Kevin Owens, though, he is your prototypical worker, right? He's just good, reliable guy. You can put him into any match. He does what you need him to do.
Yeah.
Likeable. Reminds me a bit of like a modern-day Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Good mover for a big unit,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, totally. Then my second favorite match for WrestleMania was Bayley taking on Io Sky for the singles champion, which Bayley won. This is a fucking great match. This is really, really good. This is I think this is probably what they were hoping for with Becky and Rhea if Becky hadn't gotten sick. We had the bigger a bigger opponent helping the smaller one do all these kind of like fun moves. But they nailed it. Mm-hmm. Like it was just a really entertaining match. Didn't really ever really know who was going to win. Like you sort of felt like Bayley had to win because she's so popular and she's due. But at the same time, that Io Sky, Michael, you can't trust her. Damage control. They're just so bloody sneaky.
Well, of all the major titles too, I felt this one was a little bit overlooked in terms of the build-up.
Yeah,
I think totally. They're not the big stars. Like, Becky and Rhea, along with Charlotte, are the top three of the women's division. But yes, I found this one kind of was a bit underplayed a little bit. But I haven't seen anything of that at all, so I'm actually looking forward to watching that. I'm glad that's a good one.
And then, of course, we have the main event of night two, which is Cody Rhodes taking on Roman Reigns, Bloodline Rules.
Did you think Cody was going to win?
Yeah, of course. As soon as he lost the night before, you knew he was going to win tonight. It was just a question of who's coming out. When are the Bloodline going to – I was actually a bit disappointed. I thought there was going to be more interesting and kind of like I sort of didn't quite understand. Like I guess John Cena makes sense because he had that rivalry with The Rock. But the Undertaker one just makes no sense to me because I cannot remember a single – Rock and Undertaker like rivalry.
Yeah.
Like I just would have thought that you could bring it had to be sort of Austin or no one really. Or who else would there be?
I think it would have to be Austin. I mean, yes, obviously Taker and Rock would have gone back and forth. But I feel like Hogan, I think that would be not quite believable now. But then also in terms of icons of the game, Foley, I don't know if Foley would play either. Yeah.
No.
Like he does have that connection with The Rock, but again, not
he doesn't have the right kind of gravitas. He's not as big a name. It was funny though. I just sort of felt like to me they had spent all their creative juice and then they just got to this one and they were like, let's just throw some things together and then Cody wins because the match wasn't as entertaining as the night before. And then the interference was just a bit kind of like average. I mean, we've seen kind of Jimmy Uso and Solo come in and do the spike and like, there was nothing new or fresh about it. But then something weird happened so you had The Rock come out. Cena come out, which is all right, okay, fair enough. Mm-hmm. And then The Rock come out. And then they played the Shields music, but I think they botched the where he was coming from, because it took him ages. It took ages to, like, for the cameraman, like the Rock was looking around and the cameraman didn't seem to know where to point the camera. And then the camera panned just as you saw Roman Reigns taking out Seth Rollins in his Shield gear, but you didn't get any build up or anything. I mean, I can't believe we're going to talk about logical fallacies when it comes to professional wrestling, but why the fuck is Seth Rollins going off and getting into his Shield gear? Like, he came to the ring in his Seth frickin' Rollins gear, and then he's run off to get into his tactical vest for the Shield. For what? I thought they were going to bring out John Moxley, and I was like, oh, this is fucking cool. Like, John Moxley comes out,
that would have been cool,
to settle a score with Roman Reigns, but it wasn't. It was Seth Rollins has run off, got changed, come back, and got knocked out straight away.
There is a promo I saw that before, when Seth is talking to Cody a little bit ago, when it was all kind of brewing, and so he was talking about how I could be your Shield. And then people are saying that Seth actually sacrificed his own WrestleMania for Cody by the fact he did the tag match, which he didn't have to do, which then affected him in his match against Drew. And so then he went to defend Cody again, at the end of the show. So, but we actually haven't even talked about what it was actually meant to be in the first place.
Yeah, right.
Rock and Roman.
Yeah.
I mean, sorry. Yeah.
Well, they're releasing a documentary in a couple of days, which is going to be all about this pivot. They're advertising it during WrestleMania. And I was really interested because in that scrum that The Rock did, because I watched the Roman Reigns one where he was in character, kayfabing it. Mm-hmm. And then I watched The Rock, and The Rock was just completely Dwayne Johnson. And he was like, yeah, you know, this is the beauty of wrestling, is we had a plan to be me and Roman. That had been a plan for quite a few months leading up to this. But then obviously when we put that into effect, we read the crowd reaction. And so we quickly had to change on the fly, which I think was better. I mean, it made it much more satisfying. I just think that maybe just sort of kept it to one night. Like, they were probably stuck between a rock and a hard place because they had to give The Rock a match. He'd been training for 3 months. They couldn't not use him. But I just wonder if maybe they had kept it to the second night and just kept The Rock, like, just turned that into the tag team. Like, I don't know, get Seth out of the match against Drew McIntyre and get him into the main event on night two.
Well, do you go, would it have been Rock and Roman on night two, and then maybe, I don't know what their plan might have been for Cody, but would there maybe have been a CM Punk and Seth on night one?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, what would have been their plan for Cody? Who would he have taken on?
Well, that's actually a good question, yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
But, yeah, it's actually quite interesting. But then The Rock is saying he talked to them about coming back in January and said, I want to be a heel. So if the plan was for Rock and Roman, and Rock was the heel, then Roman would have to have turned good at some stage.
Before we go, and
I mean,
thank you,
12-part
documentary, thank you. It's coming out on Wednesday on YouTube. Thank you, everyone, for sticking with us. And Michael, thank you for coming to do the show. I just want to quickly run through. I did jot down some notes from WrestleMania. Okay. So just some rapid fire observations. The WWE promo packages are still the best in sports. Like, there's nothing as good as a sports entertainment. Did they give The Rock the People's Champ belt at the Hall of Fame awards so he'd have to have something to carry to the ring? Because it's not a real fucking belt. I mean, I know none of them are real, but, like, this is the least real. And it's like, what? The People's Champion belt? And he carried it to the ring and seemed very proud of it.
From Muhammad Ali's wife, though.
I guess so. There's a remix of the Rock's entrance music, which I thought was...
I love it.
Yeah, but apparently that's a throwback to his Hollywood Rock heel turn in 2003. Seth Rollins is probably the best wrestler in the WWE at the moment in terms of, like, his versatility. I reckon he does it all in terms of promos.
Okay.
High flyer, can scrap. I think, like, I don't know what he's getting paid, but he should be getting paid the most, I reckon.
Dude, Sasha Banks going to AEW. I was reading a thing, they're banding around $5 million.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't realize that they were getting up to that level. Like,
I think they got Tony Khan.
AEW was paying that much.
He's a billionaire. Well, his dad's a billionaire at least. They got a lot of money.
It was that's the thing, though. His dad's a billionaire. He's not a billionaire. His dad's a billionaire.
And then the last thing is that The Rock and Roman Reigns was so fucking shredded. Like, it was insane. The amount of HGH and steroids that must have been consumed the last few months to get them in that condition. Yeah, The Rock especially. Like, I'm almost 50. And to carry that amount of size with that amount of muscle, like, unbelievable. And how he's still alive is insane. Like, I worry for his heart.
He's clanging and banging in the Iron Paradise at 4 in the morning every morning. So, you know, and his famous cheat day, you know, let's not forget. I remember reading an article with The Rock years ago. I think he might have been promoting, like, Scorpion King or something. Yeah. Like, it was an early movie. And this journo kind of writing kind of go, okay, so I've been duped. And she said that Rock was all about his cheat day, and kind of the basis of the article was kind of about the cheat day. It was kind of like the leaping off point and kind of what it meant and all that kind of stuff. And then she said, anyway, read all the articles. I'd print, you know, got mine locked. It's ready to go. Then I read all the articles about The Rock, and in all of them, he just talks about his cheat day. She's like, well, fucking hell, man. 15 articles about your cheat day.
He mentioned the cheat meal in his press scrum at the very end. He's like, thank you very much. It's time to go. I think I deserve myself a cheat meal. I've earned myself a cheat meal. Never mind. And we also have to go. Chambo, thank you so much for coming back onto this show. You've got a couple nights left of your comedy festival show?
I do have four shows left. Saturday and Sunday, Michael Chamberlain's Completely Incomplete History of Australian Rules, show about history of Australian rules, about 175 years in about 50 minutes, and it's a tickets can be found at comedyfestival.com.au.
It's an excellent show. I saw it with my own eyes yesterday. It's very good. In fact, it feels like if anything could go for two nights, your comedy festival show. 50 minutes is not enough time. It was very funny and very interesting, and I felt like it could be much longer.
Well, actually, the Saturday, I'm doing the show just regularly, but then Sunday is actually Bloodline Rules. So
so Dave Hughes might run in and give you a Samoan spike or something like that. Well, there'll be a link. If you'd like to buy tickets to Michael's show, we'll put the link and the promo code in the episode description. But that is TOEFL with Friends. I'm Charlie Clawson.
What?